Welcome to The Sound of Economics. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and we are bringing you this podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based think tank specialized in economics and economic policy. In this episode, we will be looking at inclusive growth and inequality in Europe. Years of crisis and stagnation have left Europeans worried about both growth and fairness. They have seen the impact of recessions on their communities, but they are all well aware that hardship has not fallen equally on all shoulders. In most countries, for example, social mobility is weak and children growing up in disadvantaged families tend to underperform when compared to their richer classmates. People with low educational levels not only have difficulties in finding a job, but they are also tending to have worse health conditions and shorter life expectancy. We recently published at Bruegel a blueprint looking at an anatomy of inclusive growth in Europe. The authors, Guntram Wolf and Jörg Davers, argued the need for policymakers to strive to bring European economies back to robust growth, but that growth must also be fair. We asked Jolt to explain us how is it possible to define and measure inclusive growth.
Inclusive growth is typically measured as an economic development which creates opportunities for all segments of the population and also distributes the dividends fairly across the population, both in monetary and non-monetary terms. One key aspect of inclusive growth is clearly income inequality, whether the income generated are distributed fairly or some segments of the society, namely the poor, receive too little, while the rich receive too rich. But inclusive growth also has a number of non-monetary dimensions. For example, it has found in the literature that poorer families typically live shorter lives. Children born in poorer families typically have worse educational achievements when they are young, and therefore when they grow up, they have much worse employment opportunities. Inclusive growth may also refer to, let's say, access to the judicial system and many other non-monetary aspects of life.
So, income inequality is a key determinant for inclusive growth. But we know that income inequality indicators are only available for individual countries. In his work, Jörg Davers created an indicator for the whole European Union. We asked how he did that.
First of all, I mentioned that Eurostat, the statistical office of the European Union, publishes income inequality indicators for the European Union as a whole. But we discovered that these are misleading indicators because these are simply the weighted averages of country-specific inequality indicators like the Gini coefficient. And our research has indicated that such a measure does not describe the true inequality indicator of the European Union as a whole. So what should be done is to combine the households in all European Union countries into a single large distribution and calculate the measure of income inequality from that European-wide distribution of income. And we did some novel econometric research and we estimated this European distribution of income, and we had very interesting findings. We found that starting in 1994 up to 2008, there was a long period where income inequality within the European Union has actually declined, even though the perception is that in many countries inequality went up. And since 2008 up to last year, inequality in Europe remained broadly the same. Moreover, we also compared income inequality in Europe compared to other regions of the world, like Asia, Africa, Latin America, and we found that income inequality in Europe is much, much lower than in these other less developed parts of the world, and also much lower than in the United States. So in fact, in terms of income inequality, the European Union delivers relatively good results. So in the European Union as a whole, inequality is relatively low, but this does not apply equally to every European Union countries. For example, in southern European countries like Greece, Italy, Spain, in the Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, and also in the United Kingdom, income inequality is relatively high. And research has also found that in countries which are more unequal, social mobility is much lower. Social mobility means the prospect for children born in a poor family to increase its socioeconomic status when he or she grows up. So clearly there are problems in certain countries with income inequality. But also beyond that, there are a number of problems, social problems in Europe. Most notably, unemployment is still too high in a number of countries. And again, it is found that when unemployment is high, then parents cannot really support their children. And again, those children will have weaker prospect in their whole life.
If statistics and scientific studies clearly show that inequality affects economic growth, we asked Jana Hainsworth how social inequalities have negative effect on the ground. Jana is the president of the Social Platform, the largest European platform of social NGOs in Europe.
As Social Platform, we hear from the experiences of the members, of our members, who are working on the ground with and for the people who are most vulnerable in our societies, whether that be children, elderly, those with disabilities, migrant refugees. And what we've seen and witnessed over the last few years, indeed over a number of decades, has been that growing inequalities manifest themselves in people feeling a greater sense of alienation, a greater sense of hopelessness, of inability to feel that they have control over their own lives. And what that also produces is this sense of protest against the existing political systems and lack of, they don't see themselves in the political leadership or in the organisations, and what this also will result in is the political instability or alienation from the main political establishments. And I think it will have, or it is having, a massive impact on the broader economy because of the instability. That means greater need to invest in tackling criminality, social exclusion, and that will have long-term effects on our social and economic sustainability as a society.
Against this background, which new policies should be pursued at national and European level to contrast those negative effects? Firstly, we asked Luca Visentini, Secretary General of the European Trade Unions Confederation.
The welfare systems, social protection systems, and more in general social Europe were considered as an obstacle to competitiveness and to productivity developments in our economy, so they have been undermined and in some cases even dismantled and destroyed. But on the contrary, the reality shows and the evidence shows that productivity and competitiveness can be boosted and improved by a well-functioning social system, social protection system, and welfare state, and they can contribute to economic performances. To address all this, we obviously need to put in place a different and alternative macroeconomic policy that should then lead to a different social policy. To support sustainable growth on the one side and on the other side better social cohesion. We need public investment also to trigger private investment. There are some initiatives going on in this respect at the national and European level, the Juncker Plan for Investment, for example, on the other side also the new initiative on the European Pillar of Social Rights, but we think this is not enough.
We asked the same question to Markus Beyer, Director General of Business Europe.
We need to improve our employment policies to make sure that we are more able to give jobs to young people to entrance to the labor markets, and therefore we will need to have a close look on too rigid labor market regulations, and we will also have to address necessary flexibilities because of the digitalization of our labor world. We will need deepening of the single market in order to provide for new opportunities. We will need free trade in order to generate growth and therefore also jobs in Europe, and we will also need to to have a look at our European Monetary Union in order to make sure that we address the issue that in the aim of increasing convergence between member states, we have come to a standstill, and this is something we need to address. And above all this, we will need to make sure that we come out of the years of underinvestment, that we trigger more private investment, but that those who can also do more productive public investment, because we will need more investment in Europe to go in the direction we want.
To conclude, we asked Joel Darvas to highlight the main policy recommendations elaborated in the blueprint published by Bruegel.
Our research has concluded a number of important policy recommendations. One of the first is related to national policies, in particular educational policies. It is found that early childhood education is extremely important for children born in disadvantaged families. So if those children don't get a high-quality education at a very early stage in their life, then that will have an impact on their later studying performance and also on their access to jobs. But at the same time, we also found that the demand for university degree workers have increased dramatically in recent years. In fact, since 2008, only jobs with university degree workers have been created, both in the European Union and in the United States. But also, if you look at country by country in the EU, we also see that in harder hit countries, like in Spain or Italy, for example, the employment of tertiary educated workers even increased during the crisis, while there was a general rise in unemployment of lower educated workers. So clearly, both early childhood education and offering the prospect of all segments of the society to able to gain sufficient skills is extremely important to address the perceived inequality and the perceived unfairness of our societies. The second key issue is the effectiveness of the social redistribution system. In the European Union, where we have only about 7% of the population of the whole world, we spend almost one half of global welfare spending. So indeed, a lot of money is spent on welfare purposes. But if you look at how efficiently this huge amount of money is spent, then we find major differences. In a number of countries, most notably in Scandinavian countries, social spending is spent very effectively, while in other countries, again, mostly in Southern Europe, social spending is very inefficient. So even if they are not able to allocate more money for social purposes, if they would just use their available money more effectively, then they would be able to achieve a lot in reducing income inequality. Another issue is the tax system. The tax system is still heavily charges workers, so labor taxes are typically very high in Europe. And again, a move away from labor taxes, also making labor taxes more progressive, and instead focusing more on wealth taxes and inheritance taxes, that also could be a very important avenues that national policymakers should explore to make their growth model more inclusive. Another aspect is protected occupations. Especially in the United States, the top 1% in terms of income earners are combined of doctors, lawyers, and some other professionals. And we see very, very few people in the top 1% who come from really high-tech industries like ICT or manufacturing. And one reason why there are so many rich people, let's say, among the doctors and the lawyers, is that these occupations are relatively protected. It's very difficult to get into such occupations, and therefore some unjustified rents are enjoyed by those people. So also in Europe, where the situation is not as severe as in the United States, but also in Europe, government should look at very, very carefully who are the top earners in their countries and whether those huge incomes that these rich people earn are really justified by their talent and their efforts, or they also regulation provide these occupations some unfair advantage over other occupations. Another issue is more macroeconomic issue, because we have seen during the crisis that fiscal consolidation throughout Europe, but especially again in the harder hit countries, concentrated a lot on childcare support, on family support, on education, and also on investment. And thereby, fiscal adjustment also made, unfortunately, the prospect for young people and for families worse. So a much more social-friendly composition of fiscal adjustment would be badly needed. And also a lot of work needs to be done to tackle unemployment, especially youth unemployment, because unemployment at the early stage of the career can be really damaging for the whole life of the worker. So it's really, really important to get back the young people into work or training and offer opportunities for these people to be able to find good jobs.
That brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for listening to The Sound of Economics. You will find further material on inclusive growth on our website www.bruegel.org. In particular, you will find the blueprint by Guntram Wolf and Joel Darvas, An Anatomy of Inclusive Growth in Europe, available both on digital format as well as for print orders. We hope you'll join us again for The Sound of Economics. See you next time!